Hi, everyone. We start the hour with the latest in the Trump presidency after a weekend of staff shakeups and new revelations in the Mueller investigation. Here's what we know so far. Special Counsel Robert Mueller and New York prosecutors are compiling at least two separate cases against President Donald Trump and his associates. The Special Counsel Office alleges that Donald Trump pursued a lucrative business deal in Russia as a presidential candidate and did not tell the American public. A separate investigation in the Southern District of New York found that Michael Cohen, Trump's former personal attorney, quote, deceived the voting public. Cohen is accused of violating campaign finance laws by paying hush money to two women who said they had affairs with the president. The prosecutors say Cohen did all of this at the direction of then-candidate Donald Trump. On Saturday, the president seemed to brush it off.
On the Mueller situation, we're very happy with what we are reading because there was no collusion whatsoever. There never has been. The last thing I want is help from Russia on a campaign.
Predictably, the Democrats had a different reaction. Here's Adam Schiff, the incoming chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, on CBS.
My takeaway is there's a very real prospect that on the day Donald Trump leaves office, the Justice Department may indict him, that he may be the first president in quite some time to face the real prospect of jail time.
And here's John Dean, the White House counsel under President Nixon, speaking on CNN over the weekend.
I think what today's filings show that the House is going to have little choice the way this is going other than to start impeachment proceedings.
And the news did not end there for the Trump administration. On Saturday, President Trump announced that John Kelly, his chief of staff, will also be leaving by the end of the year. Nick Ayers, the chief of staff to Mike Pence, also announced his departure. Yep, we've got a lot to talk about, and hopefully you've got the time. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Here to make sense of all this is Jessica Roth, a professor at Cardozo Law School and a former federal prosecutor in the Southern District of New York. Jessica, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Annie Carney, White House correspondent for The New York Times. Hi, Annie.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Jessica, I want to start with you. Let's take a look at the memo we got on Friday night from the Southern District of New York. And I'm quoting here, Cohen sought to influence the election from the shadows and, quote, Cohen deceived the voting public by hiding alleged facts that he believed would have had a substantial effect on the election. Jessica, what do you make of those charges?
Well, what the Southern District is making clear in that filing is that they believe that President Trump is implicated in the campaign finance violation that Michael Cohen has pled guilty to. The filing is quite clear that President Trump directed Michael Cohen to make those payments, or one payment he made directly, another he coordinated with a media organization to make the payment to the women. And each of those two payments constituted a separate violation of the campaign finance laws. So were the president any other person other than the sitting president of the United States, he would be in very serious legal jeopardy at this point.
That legal jeopardy includes, is this listed as a felony so far? I saw that word floating around all weekend. I just want to be sure we're clear.
Absolutely. It's a felony. Each of the two separate campaign finance violation counts is a separate felony. And then there's also the possibility of a charge of conspiracy to violate the campaign finance laws. And that would be a third additional felony.
Also coming from the special counsel's office, want to pivot here for a minute. They're talking about the quote unquote Moscow project. Here's what the president had to say a couple days before the release of those findings.
So he's lying about a project that everybody knew about. I mean, we were very open with it. We were thinking about building a building. I guess we had in a form. It was an option. I don't know what you'd call it. I decided ultimately not to do it. There would have been nothing wrong if I did do it. If I did do it, there would have been nothing wrong. That was my business.
Jessica, there's a lot of I didn't do it, I did do it. What is he talking about doing or not doing in this case?
I believe what he's talking about is whether there actually existed a project that had gotten off the ground or that had legs, if you will, in Moscow for the Trump Organization. What Michael Cohen most recently admitted is that he, on behalf of the Trump Organization, was in communication with people in Russia who had connections to Russian government officials at the highest levels about this prospect of the Trump Organization project, and that those communications continued well through the campaign, long after Mr. Cohen himself told Congress in a filing that they continued, and long after Mr. Trump was telling voters on the campaign trail that he had any possible interests in Moscow. So that's significant on a variety of levels. But if, in fact, the Trump Organization was continuing to pursue business opportunities in Russia during the campaign, that opens up the door to the possibility that they were in communication with Russian officials about some kind of quid pro quo or some coordination that would give Russian officials things that they wanted in exchange for things that the Trump Organization wanted, including business opportunities.
Annie, I want to bring you in here. There's no shortage of news this weekend. We're nearing the end of the year, and President Trump said his chief of staff, John Kelly, will be stepping down. What's the relationship been between Kelly and Trump so far?
It's been just steadily decreasing in the amount of time they spend together and respect they have for each other. John Kelly came in with plans to instill order on a disorderly West Wing, and his credentials as a 4-star Marine general gave a lot of people inside of the West Wing hope that things would change. But it has sort of diminished to a stalemate of coexistence between the two men, Kelly and the president, where Kelly essentially takes the approach of let Trump be Trump, because trying to control him is just impossible. So the news that Kelly is leaving has been anticipated for months. What was shocking about what happened over the weekend was that the anticipated replacement, Nick Ayers, who serves as Vice President Pence chief of staff, said he would not take the job. And so that leaves Trump with no clear candidate. He doesn't really have a clear second choice in mind.
And what is that? I mean, we also saw that because of Ayers is not in line for the position, I'm wondering what does that mean for Mike Pence? He doesn't have a chief of staff. So we're chief of staff-less at the highest levels.
We're chief of staff-less. And the Pence drama is obviously less interesting. It's not as important of a job. The chief of staff in the White House is essentially a cabinet-level position. It's the hardest job in Washington. And Pence world is relatively stable. So I don't know yet who will take that job. But the question is, who will replace Kelly? Who wants the job? He has a short list of candidates who are names that have been around before but sort of dropped off, and he's resurfacing now. Some of them are hinting they no longer want it. So what happened over the weekend is Ayers pulling out at the last second. He said that he would do it on an interim basis, but he wouldn't agree to the 2-year time frame that Trump laid out for him. It almost diminished the job in that this 36-year-old political operative is saying no thanks to the most important job in Washington. It shocked a lot of people inside the West Wing. It puts Trump in an awkward position of making it look like he can't find anyone to take this job.
Well, let's be clear. I mean, this administration is not new to turnover, so this is not something that's as surprising. But as you say, at this job, at this level, it's pretty intense. I want to ask you, Jessica, just turning back for a second, when we talk about the president and whether or not he engaged in business dealings with Russia, is the issue that he did not tell the American public? And if he had, would we be in the clear right now?
It's a political issue, what he told the American people or failed to tell the American people. It's not really a criminal law issue. It's not a crime to lie to the United States people on the campaign trail. It is a lie. It is a crime to lie to federal investigators. And so if Trump made statements in those written submissions to Mueller recently submitted, that would constitute a felony. If he coordinated with people in the Russian government who were involved in trying to affect the U.S. election, that could be a criminal conspiracy. If he was in coordination with people who were hacking into Hillary Clinton's emails, that's what could be a criminal conspiracy to violate the statute that makes it a crime to hack into someone's computers. So there are a lot of potential charges that Mueller seems to be investigating. But just the fact of lying to the American people on the campaign trail, that's actually not a crime.
Not a crime. And I think, well, I'll reserve comment on that one. But I do want to know, we talked about this earlier, the special counsel is essentially indicating that the president is involved in some sort of a felony. And I'm wondering, if they are accusing the president of committing a felony, here's the big question on everyone's mind: can the president be indicted? There's a lot of talk about whether or not a sitting president can be indicted. Jessica, help us understand this, please.
that is actually an open legal question. There is no Supreme Court precedent on that question. There is a memo written by an office within the Department of Justice opining that a sitting president cannot be indicted. But as I said, that's an internal memo. It could be reversed by a subsequent memo within the Department of Justice. Most people think that Mueller will abide by that current memo and would not indict a sitting president. Probably the Southern District of New York would abide by the memo as well, but we don't know that for sure. But here's the thing. If President Trump is no longer President Trump after the next election, so if he either doesn't run for election again or he's not reelected, we would still be within the statute of limitations on the campaign finance violations. Those are felonies that carry a five-year statute of limitations. The conduct occurred in mid-2016. So we have up through, prosecutors have up through mid-2021 to file those charges. So he's not in the clear.
It feels like that's coming up sooner than we would like. Annie, can you help us tie all of this together? I mean, with this White House reshuffling, the Mueller investigation, the White House is in chaos yet again. As a White House correspondent, what are you seeing inside? Are people nervously expecting that the president will be indicted? Are they just worried about the short-term cabinet changes? What's the vibe?
The vibe inside is always often oddly focused on the smaller ball issues than the big picture. And I think that this Nick Ayers news that broke last night really shocked people. And he's going into a reelection cycle. He needs someone to try and work with Democrats on any legislation he can get done, drive his campaign, protect him from what's coming from Mueller. And right now, it looks like a ship with no captain.
And is there a sense that are people concerned that the president could be indicted?
Yes, but again, it's funny. Inside, people are more concerned with who's going to take the position of the president's body man, because that position, that's someone who's leaving too. That often these small fights take up more airtime inside than the big questions of, is the president going to get indicted? I haven't heard anyone suggest that from inside.
Well, we'll sure be paying attention. Annie Carney is a White House correspondent for The New York Times. And Jessica Roth is a professor of law at Cardozo School of Law and a former federal prosecutor. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.